Going to discuss what happened this past Shabbos, and that is, unfortunately, there was a storm, and as a result, as a consequence of the very high winds, the Erev fell down right before Shabbos. So many people were caught off guard, and there were many, many questions that were being asked about what are we allowed to carry, what are we not allowed to carry. We've become so accustomed to having an Erev in our lives, in our community, that people simply don't know anymore what they are supposed to do if the Erev is not operational 1 week. So that's what I'd like to discuss today. I think it's a great learning opportunity for all of us to try and familiarize ourselves with these halachas that are very important to know. Not only because every once in a while the Erev goes down, but because every once in a while we find ourselves in a community on vacation or something where they do not have an Erev. And one has to be aware that there is a malacha on Shabbos of Hotza'ah, of carrying outside, and we need to know what the parameters of that halacha are. So let's begin with the following. As we know, we've been studying Hilchos Shabbos much of the course of this year. Not sure how far we've gotten, but we've scratched the surface. And we begin with the pasuk in Chumash that says, Lo sa'ase kol malacha. One is not allowed to do any activity on Shabbos. How do we define what is considered a malacha? That's very difficult, because if you look in the Torah itself, it does not itemize a list of what you're allowed to do and what perhaps you are not allowed to do on Shabbos. So the Gemara tells us that the Chachamim had to work hard to figure out what exactly were included in these prohibited activities on Shabbos and what perhaps might be permissible. One of the things that we certainly find to be a prohibition is the malacha of Hotza'ah, which means you are not allowed to carry on Shabbos. Why is the malacha of Hotza'ah a problem? Where do we find that Hotza'ah shows itself in the pages of Chumash? So the answer to that is, the Gemara says, all of the laws of Shabbos are learned from that which took place in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu was building the Mishkan, all of the things, all of the activities that were done in his day to build a Mishkan and have a functioning Mishkan are the things that are not permissible for us to do today on a regular Shabbos. So therefore, from the fact that the Torah says at some point along the way when Moshe Rabbeinu was gathering all of the contributions, Moshe Rabbeinu then realizes, after going through everything that came in, he realizes we have enough. So he goes out and he puts the following declaration. Ish o isha, al yasu od malacha l'trumas hakodesh. I don't need anybody's help any longer. We have enough. We don't need anyone to bring anything. Vayikalei ha'am mehavi. And the community then responded and no longer felt the need to contribute. Nobody was bringing any longer to the tent of Moshe Rabbeinu. From here, the Gemara says, is where we learn the malacha of Hotza'ah, because it means, in order to have the Mishkan functioning, everybody had to bring from their private home to the public domain where Moshe Rabbeinu was. He wasn't in his private home collecting all of this money and all the jewels and all the items necessary to build it. He was probably sitting in the middle of the encampment, and there he was collecting all of the different ingredients that he needed. And therefore, we assume, once we are told that the Jewish community stopped bringing, it means that on every other day of the week, they were bringing all the items from their home to the place where Moshe Rabbeinu was. And from here we learn that there is a malacha of Hotza'ah on Shabbos. Now, Tosas points out in the very first daf of Maseches Shabbos that Hotza'ah is somewhat of an anomaly, because every other malacha that we find on Shabbos, there is a constructive act that happens and something changes in status as a result of what I did. For example, you're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. When I turn the fire on, if nothing happens, if I turn it on and then I realize and I just take the pot off right away, I'm not in violation of the malacha of Bishul. It's only once there's a change in status, once this begins to cook. Or the malacha of Kosev on Shabbos, you're not allowed to write. So I used to have a piece of paper that was blank. Now I took a pen and I started to write. The status of this piece of paper is no longer the same as what it was before. There's a malacha of Mochek on Shabbos. You're not allowed to erase. So I had a paper that had writing on it, and now I go and I erase that which was the contents of this paper. So all of those malachos and everything else that we find on Shabbos, you see something noticeable that changes from before the activity was done to after the activity is now done. However, the one exception that we find is the malacha of Hotza'ah. I go on Shabbos and I pick up some item in my home. Let's say I pick this up and I walk outside. This stayed the same, nothing changed. And the status hasn't changed itself at all. And in fact, if I decide to go back into my house and drop it off in the same place where I picked it up from, nobody will even notice. Nothing's missing, nothing has changed, and yet we say that that is considered a malacha. Writes Tosas, that is very unusual. It's very strange that we call that a malacha when nothing at all happens. And yet we find that although it's unusual and it doesn't follow the general characteristics of what a malacha on Shabbos should have been, we still assume that Hotzah is a prohibition on Shabbos. Not only that, the Ramban points out, which is the first entry on the source sheet, the Ramban writes that there is another very unusual characteristic to the Malacha of Hotzah on Shabbos. What is that? Writes the Ramban, from the fact that we find by Hotzah something that is unusual in this regard. Let's say we just mentioned the Malacha of Bishul. You're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. Doesn't make a difference if I'm cooking in a commercial kitchen or I'm cooking in a private home. Doesn't make a difference. If you're cooking in a campground, everything is the same. If you do this activity of cooking, doesn't matter where you do it, you're in violation of the prohibition of Bishul on Shabbos. If a person goes and writes something on a piece of paper, violates the Malach of Kosev, doesn't matter if you do it inside of the house, outside of the house, in a shul, or in a school, or by your friend, doesn't matter. If you write something on a piece of paper, we assume you have violated the prohibition of Kosev on Shabbos. And yet here, writes the Ramban, when it comes to the Malach of Hotzah, it depends where you are. If I'm in my private residence, as we know, you're allowed to carry something from one side of the house to the other, from one floor to the house to the other, from one floor in the apartment building, I can walk up 100 flights of steps, and that's not considered a Malach of Hotzah on Shabbos. And yet, all of a sudden, when I step from my house to the outside, to the public domain, I'm going to be in violation of this Isser of Hotzah. Writes the Ramban, that is yet another way in which we find that Hotzah is very unusual, and it is not at all similar to any of the other malachas that we find that are prohibited on Shabbos. Just to define the terms that we're talking about. Where is Hotzah prohibited? And just for those who came in a little bit late, what we're talking about this morning is we're using this past Shabbos as a learning opportunity to understand and to appreciate what one is supposed to do when there is no Erev. Every so often it happens. Every so often you visit a community where you don't have an Erev. So what is one allowed to do, and what perhaps is one supposed to refrain from doing? So just to define the terms, what is the prohibition of Hotzah? Practically, how do you violate the Avera? So there are three ways to violate the Avera of Hotzah on Shabbos. Way number one is, if you have my private home that is next to your private home, and I bring something from my home into your home, from my property into your property, means from one private domain to another one, that is one prohibition of Hotzah on Shabbos. Okay, that's number one. Prohibition number two is, if I take something from my private residence and I bring it into the public domain, what we refer to as a Rishus HaRabim, that is the second way that one can violate the Malacha of Hotzah on Shabbos. So number one, if I bring something from a private residence to another private residence, that's number one. Number two, I bring something from a private residence to a public domain, that is application number two. And application number three that we find of the Malacha of Hotzah on Shabbos is, if there's something that is in the public domain, and I take that item and I walk Dalad Amos with it, not that I transfer from one place to another, meaning I walk into a private home, but rather I transfer this item from one place in the public domain to another place in the public domain, that is a third application of the Malacha of Hotzah on Shabbos. So those are the three things we need to think about. And that being said, there is a little bit of a saving grace, because how do we define a Rishus HaRabim? How do we define what is a public setting? That is not a simple question at all. And this is something that the Gemara discusses. It is debated very heavily in the Rishonim, and it is not clear at all. You have to look back to the times of Moshe Rabbeinu and understand what was a Rishus HaRabim, what was considered a public domain in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. After all, the halachos of Shabbos are all derived from the times of Moshe Rabbeinu and the Mishkan that he built. So we have to learn what was a Rishus HaRabim in his days in order to be considered a Rishus HaRabim in our days today. And because it's a little bit of a complicated issue, we don't have to get into all the gory details, but basically, the Ramah comes to the conclusion, Ein lana Rishus HaRabim bizman hazeh. In most of our general cities that we live in, most of our counties, we don't really find, we don't encounter a real bona fide Rishus HaRabim that the Torah describes. We don't have all the qualifications necessary to have a real Rishus HaRabim. Okay? So once that's the case, what would you say? You can carry, right? Sounds like everything's great. Everything's mutter. Not everything, because you can't go from one private residence to another private residence. But I would have said, if the Ramah is correct, that Ein lana Rishus HaRabim mizman hazeh, that we don't really have the qualifications to consider ourselves living in a society where we have a real public domain, I would say there's no problem of Hotzah. However, the Chachamim said, that cannot be. When I walk out of my home, what do you call the street? What is that? It's a public domain, so it might not fit into the rubric of what was the Rishus HaRabim in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, but it's something. It's not my private residence. So the Chachamim said that's called a Rishus HaRabim Midirabbanim. That they have made Shabbos a little bit more difficult for us. And the Chachamim said, we can't say that that's an extension of my private residence. That certainly is not. When it snows outside, I don't go and shovel the street. I assume that that's the public domain. It's someone else's responsibility. I do shovel my own home. So my own home is my home. You can't say that the street is considered an extension of my home. So therefore, the Chachamim said, we have what we refer to as a Rishus HaRabim Midirabbanan. But because we're talking about something which is only Midirabbanan, because we're talking about something which is not a real bona fide Rishus HaRabim, the way the Torah describes one, this is why we're able to have this, I don't want to say it's a fake, but we're able to have this strange kind of Erev that we have today. You think about it. The reason why I'm allowed to carry in my home is because I have walls around my home. So it's an enclosed area. I can carry inside of the enclosed area. Do you say that this whole community is enclosed because we have an Erev? I would venture to say that many of us have walked through the Erev and never even noticed that there's a string above us. We don't really view it as a wall. It's an imaginary wall that we build. We have two poles on two sides with a string that runs across it. And we consider that to be like a wall. So now it's as if our entire city is enclosed. Really, it's not. But the only reason why we can use this imaginary wall that's not really there is only because we're dealing today with a scenario where it's not really a Rishus HaRabim the way it was in the times of Chumash. And that is the reason why we have a right to be lenient and to use these very strange imaginary walls that none of us really understand. That is where the whole story begins. Questions? Yeah.
You said that you don't shovel the street, but you shovel the property.
Great question. That's an excellent, excellent question. So I'm so glad you asked it because someone on Shabbos did talk to me about this, and I think they made a mistake on two points. Number one, they wanted to know, am I allowed to carry something from my driveway into my home? It's a very good question. How do we define, now that we've defined what is a Rishus HaRabim, let us now define what is a Rishus HaYachid. Very good question. So the only reason you're allowed to carry in your home is because the home is enclosed. What about my backyard? Well, if my backyard is enclosed, then I assume it's an extension of my house. That's assuming that it's enclosed. Not every time that you have a backyard is it totally enclosed. Sometimes people have breaks in the walls, so you have to really know the laws of Erev and well to understand where you're allowed to carry and where you're not. But the front yard is a big problem because most people's front yards do not have a gate that encloses the whole yard, and certainly the driveway we don't. So someone on Shabbos suggested, very mistakenly, he said that he's allowed to take his newspaper in from the driveway on Shabbos because, after all, it's on his property. And therefore, he said, because I have to shovel my own driveway when it snows outside, it means that it's not the public domain, it means it's the private. So once it's my property, I'm allowed to bring it from the driveway into my house. He's mistaken on two accounts. Number one, because a newspaper that is printed on Friday night is muktzah on Shabbos. You're never allowed to bring it in, nothing to do with snow, nothing to do with an Erev. When the newspaper is delivered on Shabbos morning, it is muktzah, and we are not allowed to handle it for the rest of Shabbos, because number one, it's been printed on Friday night, which means a malacha was done on Shabbos, right? They don't print the newspaper before Shabbos. They want to print all the news as late as possible. So the newspaper is printed on Shabbos. So if you have a newspaper that was printed already on Thursday, and you happen to leave it in your driveway, now you want to bring it in, so on a regular Shabbos, that would be permissible. However, when you're talking about a newspaper that was printed on Shabbos itself, it is muktzah, you're never allowed to bring that in. And certainly when there's no Erev, you wouldn't be allowed to bring that in from your driveway into the home. I know that's going to surprise many people, but I didn't just make up this chumrah. This is simple. This is ABCs. So let's, I'm glad you asked that question because it's a very important one. Yeah. Manhattan is a very complicated issue. Manhattan, as well as some of the other big cities, Mexico City or in Paris, there are issues. How exactly do you deal with those? And the reason why those are bigger issues than other places is not only because it's surrounded as an island, but rather because the nature of the Rishus HaRabim in Manhattan is not the same as here. Let's say you have Broadway in the middle of the Erev in Manhattan. Broadway might very well be similar to the Rishus HaRabim of the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. You had 600,000 people walking in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu throughout the campus. On Broadway, you have 600,000 people who are driving through there every day. So the question is, because you have some big cities that might have streets in the middle of them that would qualify as a real Rishus HaRabim in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, that is why these imaginary walls that we usually call an Eruv might not work in big cities. That's really the crux of the issue, but it's too large of an issue to discuss. I really want to talk more locally about our issue here. Yeah. Excellent question. Why am I allowed to take something if you're saying if I don't have an Erev in the community? So if I have an Erev around the whole community, so everyone's included. But let's say you live in a community where you don't have an Erev and then you have an apartment building. For example, in a hotel. That's a very interesting issue. When you go to a hotel somewhere for Shabbos and there is no Erev because it's not a Jewish community at all. So now you find yourself in a hotel. Let's say a program has taken over the whole hotel. And the question that you correctly asked is, how am I allowed to bring something from one room into the hallway or into another room? That is a very good question. The Gemara discusses that as the Takana of Shlomo HaMelech. And it says that when you have a scenario like that, it's what we refer to as an Erev Chatzeros, that you have to do something, a box of matzah, you have to do something to show that we're all one house. So there are many who argue that if we're all going to one program, and we're all eating the same food in the same dining room, and one caterer is providing for all of us, so that means that this is considered like we have an extended family of 500 people who happen to be here at one time, and therefore we are allowed to carry from one place to the other. It's like one big house. But you do have to think about it. Let's say I grew up in Washington Heights. When I grew up, there was no Erev. Now there is. But when I grew up, there was no Erev at all. We lived in an apartment building. And the question is, how are we allowed to carry from our apartment to another one? It's not like our whole building was Jews. We had some Jews in the building and some non-Jews. So it is a very difficult question that you need to figure out how to properly handle when you are in that kind of circumstance. Yeah.
But I think it will have to do with how you define Rishus HaRabim and Rishus HaYachid. But if you live in an apartment house, your apartment is your...
Okay. When we talk about the Malacha of Hotzah on Shabbos, one has to think about the fact, which many do not think about, that not only are we not allowed to carry with our hands, but we're also not allowed to carry, the Rambam says, in our mouths. So some people don't realize that you're not allowed to suck a candy if there's no Erev, and you're not allowed to chew gum. So much so, I don't get grossed out by this, but the Rambam says, you know, some people have a lot of saliva and sometimes, you know, get rid of it. So the Rambam says that when that happens, if a person gathers saliva in their mouth and they continue to walk on Shabbos without either swallowing it or getting rid of it, says the Rambam, that would be a malacha potza on Shabbos. Whatever's normal to be in your mouth is normal. But if the Rambam says you're the kind of person that gathers saliva in your mouth and then wants to extract it, in a case like that, we assume that is considered to be a malacha of hotza on Shabbos, which was surprising to some people, but that is what the Shulchan Aruch writes, that the malacha of hotza applies not only to one's hands, but it applies also in other ways as well. On top of the malacha of hotza on Shabbos, as we just mentioned, the Chachamim also made a prohibition that if somebody else does the malacha of hotza for me, which they were not allowed to do, the Shulchan Aruch seems to say that you're not allowed to derive benefit from the malacha that was done by that other person. So say, for example, this Shabbos, there was a lot of ambiguity. Some people knew, some people didn't know. So I have another family that's supposed to eat over at my house, and they were supposed to contribute a certain portion of the meal. So they show up at my house, and they were carrying all the items, and they come to the house, and the question is, well, now they violated a malacha on Shabbos of Hotzah. They didn't know, unbeknownst to them. But should I be allowed to use that food or not? And the Shulchan Aruch seems to say that no, you're not allowed to use something that another person, even if that person may not have realized, but you're not allowed to use something that another person did a malacha with on Shabbos. So you still might not be safe. And that's something to be aware of as well. Because it is so difficult to go through a Shabbos, as we all experienced this week, how many times did people stop themselves in the middle of the street and realize, oh, I have a tissue, I have this, and I'm carrying that. And people don't really think about this because we're blessed to live in a community where we don't often have to think about it. But because we assume that it's very difficult to go through a Shabbos without violating the Malacha of Hotzah, therefore the Gemara seems to say in Meseches Erev and Daf Samach Zayin that we have an obligation as community leaders to make sure that we build a proper Erev, that we construct an Erev that can be usable to make Shabbos easier for everybody. So the Gemara tells the following story about a bris milah that fell out on Shabbos, and it was in a certain apartment building where Abaye and Rava both lived, two of the great giants of the generation. And the Gemara says that they forgot to bring some of the utensils that were necessary for the bris to be done properly. So one person said to the other, well, why don't we just carry it? Obviously there's an Erev here, Abaye and Rava live here. So somebody turns back and says, no, actually, we don't have an Eruv here. So the other one looks back at him and says, Abaye and Rava live in this community and there's no Eruv? How can it be? So the Mordechai in the back of the Gemara, one of the Rishonim, if you look at number Beis, he points out, what's the big deal? Just because Abaye and Rava live here, why does that mean there has to be an Eruv? Writes the Mordechai, Mashma Mikan, we see from that story in the Gemara, the mitzvah la'arev. It's an obligation of the community leaders to build an Eruv as best as possible, even if they personally are not going to use it. So you want to be machmir, you don't want to use it, very nice, but you have an obligation to make sure that people in your community are not going to violate the law of Hotzah on Shabbos, and therefore the Mordechai writes, we learn from this Gemara, that every community has an obligation, and the Chasam Sofer takes it so far as to say, you have a mitzvah to build the Eruv because you are going to prevent people from violating the Avera of Hotzah on Shabbos. However, at the same time that we find that an Eruv is very important and we want to facilitate people being able to carry properly outside on Shabbos, the Gemara Maseches Eruv in Daf Nun Tes does say that there's another consideration to keep in mind. And that is the fact that the Gemara says, what's going to happen? Every community is now going to build an Eruv. Take, for example, our community. We build an Eruv. We all get so accustomed to carrying outside, the Gemara says, no one is even going to ever remember that there was a prohibition of carrying on Shabbos. No one even knows about it. We grow up, at least my kids grow up, they don't even think about the fact that there's an issue of Hotzah on Shabbos. They take it for granted that there's an Eruv. And therefore the Gemara says, when constructing an Eruv, which is a good thing to do, the Gemara says, when doing so, you have to make sure to leave off a part of the city that is not going to be included in the Eruv, in order that everybody should know the only reason you're allowed to carry is because there's an Eruv. But you're not allowed to carry in that part of the neighborhood because the Eruv does not allow us to carry there, and that will remind us that there's a malacha of Hotzah on Shabbos. So you'll ask yourself, where in this community do we ever leave a part out of the Eruv where we're not allowed to carry? So we got smart in our old age. It's been a few thousand years since we started making Eruvin. So now, what we generally do is we leave out a part where nobody's going to go anyway. So let's say you have, you know, Valley Stream, which is not part of the Jewish community anymore. So, that's not part of the Eruv anymore. It's out of the Eruv. Or you'll take a part of the Eruv, a baseball field out somewhere, who knows where, or a part of the golf course where nobody's going to go anywhere. Anyway, so you leave that part of the Eruv out. So we've circumvented the problem, but the problem is still here. And the reason why I mention this is because Rav Moshe Feinstein, in a tshuva, deals with this tension. He deals with the issue about how do you make this balance. On the one hand, we want to build an Eruv in order to make Shabbos easier for everybody, in order that we should prevent people from violating the Avera of Hotzah. On the other hand, we also have to be concerned that we're going to raise a generation of Jews who will not even know that there's a Malach of Hotzah on Shabbos at all. How many of us here know the laws of Hotzah before today's shir? How many of us know what is a Rishus HaRabim, what is a Rishus HaYachid, and how do we define the terms, and what is permissible and what is not? I would venture to say probably almost none. I don't know, but I would mean, okay, you grew up in a very wonderful community. However, an Eruv, so that's why. But most of us who didn't have that great opportunity are in a situation where we know nothing about the laws of Hotzah, and that is exactly the concern that the Gemara says. We're going to basically make people forget about the Aveir on Shabbos. Look at the Tshuva of Rav Moshe. We'll read part of it together. We begin as follows. And the beginning of this, to me, is very surprising. It's very surprising, as you'll see. Rav Moshe writes the following, "Imtzarach lehishtadel lesaken eruvin bizmanenu." He says, do we have an obligation to go out of our way to construct a proper eruv in our times? Mitzad hatzorach ha'inshi latzeis mibateim. Because there's a need of people to go out of their homes on Shabbos. So he says, somebody sent him a letter asking him this question, and he responded the following, that the person wants to do it lahasir michshol. The person wants to do it in order to prevent people from violating the Aveir, v'gam laharbos onik Shabbos. It will enhance my experience of Shabbos if I'm able to go out of my house, if I don't have to stay in the house the whole time. Ayidei zeh sheyuchlu latzeis mibateim im hatinokos, that I can go to the park with the children. V'lo yitztarchu lios kluim babayis. And this way we won't have to be jailed in the home the entire duration of Shabbos. We'll be able to go outside. Writes Rav Moshe as follows, af bibendino zu ein sarach mamish. He says, I don't know, I don't think it's so necessary to build an Eruv in America. Why not? Listen to his argument. Hold your breath because he's going to finish it off. He says, Hakol nokel lahachin babayis al kol haShabbos. He says, we're not living in a ghetto. We're not living where we have one bedroom or one room in the whole apartment where parents and children all sleep there, and that is also the kitchen and the dining room, and everything serves a multi-purpose room. That is not the scenario that we live in today. We have a life where we have homes. I don't know, Rav Moshe Feinstein lived on the Lower East Side. I would imagine two-bedroom apartments. I don't know what he's describing. But he says this is not like the olden days where it was so necessary that people needed to get out of the house on Shabbos. What's the big deal? We have big homes today. Stay in your house for Shabbos. And says Rav Moshe, we all have a pantry that is stocked up, and we all have refrigerators. It's not like I need to go to my neighbor to get something that I wasn't able to make for Shabbos. He says, we all have everything prepared before Shabbos. And therefore he says, I'm not so sure whether this is so important that we need to go out of our way to build an eruv. However, Rav Moshe says, you know, I have been told that certainly women who have children are really not going to be happy with this, and we really need to do something to make sure that they can get out of the house. And not only that, he says, we live in a society where you can't really leave your house without a key. Everybody needs to lock the door, unfortunately, today. And they didn't have the Shabbos locks that we have today. So Rav Moshe says, you know, we got to figure something out because people need to take their children out on Shabbos. They don't want to have them in the house the whole time. And not only that, he says, we also need to carry the keys. So what are we going to do? All right, let's skip down to the next paragraph. He says, as much as it's a good idea, and we're going to go out of our way to build an Eruv, and we're going to try our best to make it as kosher as possible, writes Rav Moshe Avol Le'umazeh, on the other hand, Ikot Tzorach Lehepach. He says, I see a reason why we should have an objection to making an Eruv. Why is that? Even if the qualifications allow us to make an Eruv, he says, we should think about the following consideration. Harei B'Shvil Zeh, if we build an Eruv, Lo Yedu Klal She'ika Iser Hotzah. We will raise a generation of Jews who don't even know that there is a prohibition of carrying outside on Shabbos. V'zeh vaday she'isur hayosur hagadol hu lahashkich haTorah. Says Rav Moshe, the greatest avera that a person can do is to make people forget about the laws of the Torah. And therefore, says Rav Moshe, am I going to take this upon myself to go out of my way to build an Erev, thereby making an entire generation of Jews forget about the laws of Shabbos? I don't know how to do that, says Rav Moshe. And therefore he goes back and forth, should we do this, should we not, what's going to be, turn the page, where he comes to the following conclusion. And he says, second line, Ach ula yesh l'sakin zeh, he says, look, I have this tension, I don't know what to do, I have an obligation to build an Eruv because the community needs it. On the other hand, I'm nervous, if I build the Eruv, nobody's going to know the laws of Shabbos. So he says, the compromise is as follows. We're going to build an Eruv, however, he says, you have to have a place that is nikur b'chol batei knesios. You have to have a place that is recognizable in every shul. Tia hodak suva she'ika eruv, where there's a big sign that says, you are allowed to carry the Shabbos because there's an eruv. Meaning, don't let people take it for granted. When they come into shul, they should see, oh, you're not really allowed to carry. The only reason you're allowed to carry is because there's an eruv. And there, says Rav Moshe, you have fulfilled your requirement. Why? Because on the one hand, you saved everybody by building the eruv. On the other hand, you are educating people that if there is no air, if you're not allowed to carry. So therefore, Rav Moshe suggests, this is what you should do. However, he says, I'm still hesitant, because he says, nobody really shows up to shul anyway. So I'm not sure what he was dealing with in the Lower East Side, but here, you know, we have many people that show up to shul. We don't have the sign that he's describing. But I think it's a very good question. And certainly when we have a Shabbos like the one we just had, it's an important time for us to remind ourselves that there is a malacha of hotzah on Shabbos, and there are parameters of what we are allowed to do and what perhaps we are not. So it's something that we should use as an opportunity to educate ourselves. Like Rav Moshe says, this is always the tension before building any Eruv. Is it the right thing to do? Because on the one hand, we're making life easier for everyone. On the other hand, maybe we're making people forget what the rules of the Torah is, which is why there are some communities, I believe, that have the practice that once or twice a year they take the Eruv down. They take the Eruv down for a Shabbos. Now, as much as we would hate for that to happen, it makes a lot of sense when you see the sources. Once or twice a year, they educate the community that this Shabbos we're not having an Eruv, and they take down one of the poles or one of the strings because they want people to understand what it means to live a life of Shabbos without an Eruv. What is the law of Hotzah? And after all, the only allowance that we have to build an Eruv is if we periodically remind the community that there are things that we are not allowed to carry on Shabbos. So, let us now get into some of the details of some of the questions that were asked this past Shabbos. What are we supposed to do, and what can we carry, what perhaps can we not? Yeah.
There was an issue this past Shabbos that people did not know.
Number one, the Rambam says that we are allowed to, obviously we are allowed to walk outside on Shabbos. That goes without saying. Now, is it reasonable that God allowed us to walk outside on Shabbos? But he didn't allow us to wear clothing when we walk outside on Shabbos? Probably not. Right? Unreasonable to imagine such a thing. So you live in a community with no Erev, or you live in a community where the Erev fell down. So it's reasonable that not only am I allowed to walk outside in the Rishus HaRabim on Shabbos, but I'm also allowed to get dressed. Now, what constitutes getting dressed? How much am I allowed to wear? So whatever you would normally wear, you're allowed to wear on Shabbos as well. Or if you get more dressed up on Shabbos because it's a nicer event, and you get dressed up the way you would go to a wedding or to some fancy event, whatever it might be, you're allowed to wear that on Shabbos because we assume that is considered to be normal. And the Rambam says, Malbushav shel adam b'telem legabe gufo. A person's body is certainly allowed to walk around on Shabbos, and therefore the clothing that normally clothe my body are also allowed to be worn on a regular Shabbos when I go outside. That would not be considered a malacha of hotzah at all, and this is why we were allowed to wear clothing. Rav Moshe Feinstein discusses, let's say, take for example, something we don't think about, collar stays. Women don't often have this problem, but collar stays, says Rav Moshe, is that really considered a part of my clothing? You can manage without it, but Rav Moshe argues, since that's the normal way that a person would wear a shirt, that before putting the shirt on, they would put on a collar stay, that is not considered to be carrying on Shabbos. The same way, when I wear a jacket, I don't have to take out all the extra threads that are inside of the lining. I assume whatever they put in is part of the jacket, and that's necessary to have a functioning jacket or a functioning coat. Therefore, we assume, says Rav Moshe, you're allowed to put the collar stays into the shirt as well, and that would not be considered to be a malacha at all. Following... What?
The Shabbos label too?
We'll get to labels in a minute. Just hold on to that thought. Following this thought of clothing being allowed to be worn on Shabbos because that's the normal way, you would say, what's the status of jewelry? I would have said jewelry is also like clothing. The same way I would wear earrings or a necklace or a bracelet on a regular day of the week or on a nice event where I was going. Hold on to that. Good question. I'm glad he said that. So I would say that jewelry would be the same. Why would it be any different than the status of clothing? That is a good question. However, the Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, jewelry is not permissible. Don't worry, 1 minute. The Gemara says in Masechta Shabbos, jewelry is not permissible. Why is it not permissible? Says the Gemara, you're right. It is like clothing. However, we have the following consideration that we need to think about. If you're going to have these fancy, beautiful diamond earrings that you just bought, or that someone else just bought for you, and you're going to be walking in the street and someone's going to say, wow, look at that, I'm so amazed, and you're going to take it off and show it to someone else. Says the Gemara, you have to be concerned. People are going to be showing off the jewelry. I'm never going to take my clothing off and give it to someone else in the middle of the street. That wouldn't happen, so that's not a concern. But my jewelry, maybe somebody likes the necklace that I'm wearing, so therefore we have to be concerned you're going to give it to someone else. Writes the Rama, who are you kidding? Come on. Nowadays, we live in a society where everybody has jewelry. And even if somebody likes your pair of earrings or your necklace, and they say, you know, I'd like to borrow it for this or that event, they're not going to take it off of you while you're wearing it. They're going to come to your house at a later point, I would imagine, and they'll borrow it from you. And therefore, says the Rama, nobody would ever take off jewelry in the middle of the street and give it to someone else to look at, or give it to someone else to borrow. So we don't have to be concerned about transferring from one hand to another, and hotza on Shabbos, and carrying it outside. Says the Rama, this is no longer a consideration, and we have a right to wear jewelry as we normally would. There is a discussion that the Gemara has in Masechta Shabbos about pads in a shoe. So let's say you're allowed to wear shoes because that's part of one of the articles of clothing that you're certainly allowed to wear, the same way you're allowed to wear everything else. What about a pad in a shoe? Well, says the Gemara, a woman is allowed to wear a pad, not only if it's a man. The Gemara says if you have a pad, not only if it's, what's it called, orthotics that you need for health, but also if it's something that's going to make your shoe more comfortable, and this is the normal way that you would wear. So I know sometimes women have these things in the back of their shoes so that it doesn't irritate their foot. What's that called? That little pad? A pad. Heel pad? Thank you. So if you have something like that, which you're wearing just because you want it to be more comfortable while you wear it, that also would be considered a part of the shoe, even though it's not really necessarily a real part of the shoe, but since that's the regular way you would wear it, that would be permissible. You just asked about the tags on your clothing. So, I don't know what they do when women send clothing to the dry cleaners, but I do know, at some point in my life, I got married, and I met other women who are outside of my own immediate family, and there are some women that I've come to learn who keep tags in the clothing that they buy. I don't quite understand why. I think once you wear it, you would normally take it off. But it seems last night when I mentioned that at the shir, everybody said, yeah, we always leave them in. I don't know why. Not sure exactly. What?
The price tag,
yeah. So, You can't really return the item after you wear it. That's certainly not ethical. So if you're leaving the price tag in because you plan to return it after you wear it to the wedding, you're not allowed to do that. But some people just leave the tags in. I don't know exactly why. I think it looks very strange, but I guess they don't see it strange at all. So the question is, when you have tags on the garment, or for example, I send my shirt into the dry cleaners. So the way it used to be was, the dry cleaners would send it back. Anyone remember that? With the tag in the middle of the shirt. They don't, not here. The dry cleaners here now puts it on the bottom corner of my shirt. So I don't even bother to take them off anymore because it's always tucked in. Correct? So the Rambam says that if one has a tag on the clothing, so the Rambam says, if it's darko bakach, if it's normal, let's say the tag on the back of my shirt or the back of a blouse, whatever it is, most people don't go and cut that off. That's normal. That stays. It has the instructions of how you're supposed to clean it and wash it, whatever it is. So that you're allowed to wear. That's not called hotza. That's just called part of the garment. The same way the lining inside of your clothing is not considered hotza. So to the tag is considered a part of the garment. But if you have something which is ein darko bakach, I would never walk around with that tag from the cleaner sticking out of my shirt. So it happens to be that I had a shirt designated for Shabbos, it got all dirty, and now Shabbos afternoon I have to put on a new shirt and I forgot to take off this thing. I would not be allowed to wear that outside on Shabbos because that's just not the normal way for a person to walk around. If you have the kind of tag where it's at the bottom and a person doesn't even bother to cut it off and nobody pays attention to it, that's one thing. But if you have the old tags that the cleaners used to put on where it's sticking out a big orange or green or purple piece of paper from the middle of your shirt, so we would assume that would be a malacha of hotza. The reason I mention all these details is because who would have ever thought about the malacha of hotza and how many things we have to worry about and think about before going outside without an eruv? It is something that I think we should relish the opportunity that we have to really discuss this issue and understand it properly. Yes. So what about the people who have a tie pin or who have, I remember I grew up in the Heights, so what do we do about keys? So they used to have those Shabbos belts. I think they were the most crazy looking things I've ever seen. What? But that's what people used to do. And I think some people still do it there. So that is considered a part of your clothing. However, the Mishnah Berurah writes, that doesn't mean someone asked me Shabbos morning. They came to shul, they had their keys, and then they realized that the Erev was down. What do I do? So he said, oh, I'm just going to put it on my belt. That doesn't work. You can't attach it to your belt. The only reason the belt key works is because it was a part of the belt. But if you're just going to take the key ring and attach it to somewhere on your clothing, that's not called getting around the problem. If it's a part of your jewelry, it's a tie pin or something like that, that would be okay. What we are not going to discuss, because it's just too overly complicated and we don't have enough time, is, let's say there's no Erev, and you have this tie clip or the belt, you figure out how to get the key. How do you take the key off and get it into the door? Once you stick it in, you're going into a Rishis HaYachid. How do you like that? Right? I'm carrying the key outside. I figured out how to carry it properly. Now I take it off of my garment. I'm standing in a Rishis HaRabim. I stick it into the keyhole, which is now inside of my house. So how am I allowed to do that? That's a major question. For now, we're not going to discuss it. It's too complicated. Let me just try to get through some of the items, and then if there are questions afterward, we'll... Okay, glasses we're going to get to, as I said. Gloves is a big question in Shulchan Aruch. What is the status of gloves? So you'll say, what's the question? Gloves should be the same as any other item of clothing that we wear. Says the Shulchan Aruch, not so clear. You look at the second side of the page that we're on. Number Dalid, the Shulchan Aruch says, Mutar Latzeis B'Shabes B'Bate Yadayim Hanikroim Guntish. That is the way he called gloves. So the Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to wear gloves outside. However, he then writes, he qualifies a statement and he says, Yesh Misha Machmir. There are those who feel that you are not allowed to just wear gloves the normal way we do. There are some who believe, Shatzarach Shiyatafre Me'erav Shabes B'Bate Yadayim Shal Mabushab. Some believe that you have to sew them into your coat, like the kids' gloves. So some say you have to sew them onto your clothing before Shabbos starts. Why is that? And the Shulchan Aruch writes, V'roi lachosh lidvarav. Shulchan Aruch says that is really the proper custom, that you shouldn't wear regular gloves without an Erev. Why? Same as the concern that the Gemara had about jewelry. Because very often we're walking in the street, and we have an itch, so we take the glove off and we start scratching or itching, or we have a rock in our shoe, so we take our gloves off and we put it in our pocket and we do something. Gloves are the kind of item that we don't keep on us the entire duration of a walk when we're outside. We put them on, we take them off, you shake someone's hand, whatever it might be. So we have to think about that issue. This past Shabbos, I was walking to a kiddush that somebody made, and there was somebody who passed me on the streets. He says, "Oh, Rabbi, you know, it's not respectful of me to shake your hand with my gloves on." I said, "It would be disrespectful of you to take your glove off because there's an Erev. There's no Erev this week. So you have to be concerned about that." He said, "Really? That would be a problem of the Erev if I take my glove off?" I said, "Yeah." So that is precisely the reason why, the Shulchan Aruch is not so clear about whether or not you're allowed to wear gloves on Shabbos, because he says you have to be concerned. Very often when people wear gloves, they take them off. They don't just leave them on the entire time when they're outside. What about glasses? You just mentioned about glasses. That is a very good question. A number of people mentioned that glasses was an issue for them. The Chayei Adam writes, you're not allowed to wear glasses outside on Shabbos. Says the Chayei Adam, why? Now just think about what kind of glasses they used to wear back then. They didn't have, what are these called? Temples? Right? Is that correct? What are the side things called? So they used to have glasses that just sat on their nose. Says the Chayei Adam, the likelihood of those falling off, and then you have to pick them back up and put them on again, is very high. So therefore, he says, you have to be concerned that maybe if you're going to wear the glasses, it's the same problem as the gloves, it's the same problem as what we discussed with the jewelry, which is no longer a concern. But says the Chayei Adam, the glasses is something we need to think about. However, nowadays that we have glasses which normally are tight, you know, every so often you see a person who this broke off or that broke off and the glasses are falling, so that's not what we're talking about. But when you have a normal pair of glasses that is not broken, that is not loose, a normal pair of glasses that normally people wear on the two sides of their head, so we assume that that would not really pose an issue today, because the assumption is that that's going to remain on your head. What about reading glasses before sunglasses? That's part of the regular way you do it, the same way you wear earrings. I don't know. Do they take them off so often? I don't think they take them off, or they just... I don't know. So the what about reading glasses? That is a good question. Reading glasses is something that the Aruch HaShulchan discusses, and he says, well, how are you going to wear your reading glasses out in the street? So you want to do it only because you want them for shul. But he says you can't see with them. So therefore the Aruch HaShulchan says you can't say that that's part of your article of clothing that you normally would wear. You would never wear that outside when you're walking in the street. You would only wear it when you're reading something. If you have bifocals, which you use all the time, so then there's no question. But if you have a pair of reading glasses, that would be a malacha of hotzah on Shabbos. You would not really be allowed to do that. What about sunglasses? Sunglasses is a good question. So number one, the Achronim say, if you're wearing the sunglasses because you're afraid that your eyes are going to be damaged or you're going to have some long-term effect because of the sun rays, so then obviously you're allowed to wear them. Most of us, I believe, aren't really so afraid. Every once in a while, we leave our sunglasses at home, and we don't turn around to go get it. You leave your cell phone at home, you go back. You leave your sunglasses at home, not everybody goes back. That means that it's not so important. However, the question is, even though sunglasses, it's true, this is something that we wear all the time, and it's something that should be considered a normal part of our dress or normal part of our attire, the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa writes, look, let's say me. Sometimes I'm walking in the street. I don't recognize everybody's facial features to know exactly who they are when they're wearing these huge glasses. I don't know. So sometimes when they want to introduce themselves, they take the glasses off to show their face. I believe that's something we do all the time, right? When we wear sunglasses, most people don't just wear them. I don't know. What? I assume most people take them on, take them off, even when they're outside in the street. When you bump into somebody who might not recognize you, you take them off. That's normal. When I bump into someone in the street, I don't take my glasses off and say, oh, I want you to get the full picture of who I am. But when I do bump into someone in the street and I'm wearing big sunglasses that cover half of my face, I would take them off. That is something that I think we've seen people doing. So therefore, the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa writes, you have to be concerned about sunglasses, that maybe that's an issue. I was asked this Shabbos about, unfortunately, there's someone in this community who is not able to walk. And there are many people, unfortunately, and he goes with a walker. And there was a kiddush this Shabbos that the Pollocks made, so we were walking, and I felt bad that he was walking by himself very, very slowly, so I walked with him. And as we're going, he turns to me and says, you know, Rabbi, I just realized, am I even allowed to be walking outside on Shabbos with this thing? Like, there's no Erev this week. So am I allowed to carry this? He said, like, I don't know if I want to know the answer or not. So It's a very good question. So the story with that goes as follows. The Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos, Daf Samach Vav, there is a machlokas. Do I have it on here? No. So the Gemara has a discussion about whether or not Hakitea Yotze Bekav Shalom. Kitea means someone who is crippled. Is someone who is crippled, who has an amputated leg, are they allowed to walk outside with a kav shalo? What does a kav mean? They used to have like a prosthetic that they put in the place of the leg. So is that person allowed to walk outside with the prosthetic leg on Shabbos or not? And the Gemara has a machlokas hatanaim, whether or not that would be permissible. The conclusion of that Gemara is, the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins is, you're not allowed to walk outside with a prosthetic. However, Rashi says there, the prosthetic that they are describing is not at all the prosthetic that we have today. He says that when people then had an amputation or whatever it might be, they were missing part of the leg, they didn't have a prosthetic that was attached to the leg like we have today that the person actually leaned on. That wasn't a support for them. They walked around with a cane, and all of their weight was on those canes. The only reason they put in this prosthetic, this fake limb, whatever it was just that when they go in the street, nobody should laugh at them. Or nobody should look at them strange. And therefore, that's why we paskin that when you have something like that, you're not allowed to wear that on Shabbos because there is no real purpose for that on Shabbos. It's not supporting you. It's not doing anything. However, the prosthetics that we have today, which are attached to the body and certainly hold the person's body up, we assume that would be no question that you would be allowed to do that, which leads us to the next question. What about when you have somebody who needs a cane or crutches? So we would assume that since if a person needs to use a cane or crutches, they use and they put all of their weight onto that, so we would assume that that would be permissible. Provided that, this is the only way I can walk. Meaning, if I don't use a cane, I can't walk around. But let's say I'm the kind of person, sometimes I use it, sometimes I don't. So then the Shulchan Aruch says you're not really allowed to use that. What we're talking about is a case where a person really cannot walk. This person I was walking with this week, who had the walker, really cannot walk around without the walker, which means he's allowed to use that because for him, that is considered like his legs. That is considered like a part of his body. That is his support system. The same way he would be allowed to use a cane without an Erev, he's allowed to use crutches without an Erev, he would also be allowed to use this. Now, one has to be aware, I know nobody uses walkers just for fun, but one has to be aware that some people use walkers just as a precaution, not because they need to support their weight, but because they're afraid of tripping on something, they're afraid. So that's much more questionable. When the person is not using it solely because they support themselves on it, you can't really say that that's like a shoe. So that's a little bit more questionable. A question that somebody asked last night is, what about somebody who has a wheelchair? Now, you're not allowed to push a wheelchair for somebody else when there's no Erev. That certainly is not permissible because that's considered Hotza on Shabbos. Hotza doesn't only mean picking up, it means also transferring something, moving something along. That would also be Hotza. So if somebody else needs a wheelchair, you would not be allowed to push it for them. However, if the person knows how to push the wheelchair on their own, right? Very often you have a person who's healthy enough, unfortunately they can't walk, but they're healthy enough, their body is strong enough that they can wheel the wheelchair by themselves on the side with their hands. So Rav Moshe Feinstein argues in Igros Moshe Chelek Dalet that he believes, based on a whole number of factors, he believes that one would be allowed to wheel themselves on the wheelchair, although you wouldn't be allowed to have somebody else wheel you. Rav Moshe says, that wheelchair where I know how to do it myself is considered like my shoes. And he says the same way I'm allowed to wear shoes is also what's going to allow me to wheel the wheelchair. Fascinating psak, but a very important one. Yeah. Next major issue that you raise is about watches. What's the story with watches? That's a great question. So the Mishnah Berurah writes, number one, when we talk about a pocket watch, which was very in style in his days, it's not so common today, but the Mishnah Berurah writes, how can I allow someone to wear a pocket watch on Shabbos? Let's try to break this down. What are you going to say? That's like jewelry? Nobody sees it. So what does it mean? You're allowed to wear undergarments because that's the normal way that I dress, and that's considered it's not expected that a person's going to go outside without it. And like the Rambam says, the clothing that you wear is batel gabei gufo. That's like a part of me. The same way I'm allowed to go outside, I'm also allowed to wear whatever clothing is normal for me to wear. But, says the Mishnah Berurah, what are you going to say about a pocket watch? What are you going to say? It's like jewelry? It's not like jewelry. And if someone wants to see what my watch looks like, then I'm going to take it out for them? Says the Mishnah Berurah, it doesn't make sense. But then he argues, maybe he'll say, what do you mean? It is jewelry because the string that you have is nice also. The chain that you have is also very nice. But then he argues, why are you paying so much money for the pocket watch? Are you paying for the watch or are you paying for that chain that attaches to it? It's not for the chain, it's for the watch. And therefore he says it's a hard argument to make that the watch is considered to be a part of the chain. Right? So he says, even though the chain might be permissible, the watch itself he doesn't believe would be permissible because the watch itself is a problem. What about when you talk about a watch, the wristwatch that we have? So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, although it's a major discussion whether or not you're allowed to, and Rav Moshe writes, Hamachmer Tavor Ala Bracha, if a person refrains from wearing a watch on Shabbos, it's great. However, he says, Me'ikar Adin, all things being equal, he thinks we have a right to be Mekel, we have a right to assume that a regular wristwatch that we wear is considered a normal part of our attire, it's considered like jewelry, and certainly I've seen people who have watches that broke, but they're very fancy watches and they wear them anyway. Right? Some people do that. Some people have such fancy watches that they want to wear them even when they're not functional, even when they're not operational, because we assume that they're considered like a bracelet. It's like every other piece of jewelry that they wear. So certainly if you have a watch like that that you would wear even when it was broken, that's certainly considered like a bracelet. There's nothing even to discuss. But what Ramosha is talking about is the regular watches that most people wear, which are not so fancy. So Ramosha says, although it's a major discussion, he comes to the conclusion that he thinks it would be permissible. The final question that we need to discuss is, what about children on Shabbos? And this was a major issue. There were many who wheeled their children to shul and who did not know about the fact that there was no Erev, and now they're in shul with the kids and they don't know what to do. How do you get home? That's a problem. That's a major problem. And the background of the issue goes as follows. I don't want to end too late, so let's try to just spend 3-4 minutes on this and then we'll end. The Gemara says we have a concept, we have a principle that we refer to as Hachai Noseis Atzmo. Okay, so I'm certainly not allowed to, on Shabbos, when I go outside into the street, I'm not allowed to pick up a chair in the street. That's Hotzah. And I'm not allowed to bring something from here to there. What about picking up human beings? So the Gemara assumes that once you have a human being that can walk around, that can move around on their own, we have a concept called Hachai Noseis Atzmo, which means it's not dead weight. They are basically carrying themselves. You're just, I don't know what you call it, you're facilitating, assisting a little bit, but we generally assume, says the Gemara, Hachai Nosei Asatzmi. Although that is true, we still assume there's an Isser Midirabbanan. Rabbinically, you're not allowed to do that because you're still considered to be carrying. So that's where this whole discussion begins. Many people came to me on Shabbos and said, what do you mean? Hachai Nosei Asatzmi, so I'm allowed to carry my children home. Not correct. It's not true. Number one, it's not true because the whole discussion that the Gemara even has is only when you're talking about a child that's old enough to carry their own weight. When you're talking about an infant, the discussion doesn't even begin. So there's nothing to talk about when you have a child who's too young or when you have a person who's too incapacitated, who's not able to move themselves. Let's say you have an adult who just needs to be in a wheelchair and you say, you know what, we'll get two people to carry this person home. That is not even in the discussion of Achai Nosei Asatzmo, because that person is certainly considered to be like dead weight. They're not helping at all in the process of carrying. So this is a very important question. What is one supposed to do? Should they bring children to shul and then find out that they are not allowed to use the Erev because the Erev is down? This is a very, very interesting issue. So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in one of his tshuvas that, look, if the child is crying, and you're talking about a kid who, you're not going to be able to calm him down. You're not going to be able to convince this child to walk any longer. It's not going to happen. Says Rav Moshe, under these circumstances, I believe there's enough to rely on that you can pick the kid up and bring him home. Why? Listen to this is why you need great people like Rav Moshe to say such a thing. Rav Moshe says, number one, as we said in the beginning of the shiur, what we're dealing with today is only a dirabbanan. We don't have a real rishus haralim. We're dealing only with a public domain, which is a midirabbanan. Number two, Rav Moshe says, when you have a child who's screaming in the middle of the street, we assume that that child is considered to be like a chole. So, generally, we are very lenient when it comes to Isurim Dirabbanan for a chole. Number three, says Rav Moshe, we have this consideration of Achai Nosei Asatzmo. You're dealing with a 5-year-old child who's having a temper tantrum. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but it happens to us almost every Shabbos. So, when you have a child who is old enough to walk but has a tantrum along the way and doesn't want to continue, so Rav Moshe says that is considered like a chola, and it's only midirabbanan because you're outside in a public domain, which is not similar to that of Moshe Rabbeinu. Number three, says Rav Moshe, the child really is able to carry themselves. Hachai Nosei Asatzmo, only midirabbanan is not allowed to. So Rav Moshe says, putting all this together, he would assume that it would be permissible. I did ask my father, what are we supposed to do if children show up to shul and they're infants? What are we supposed to do with them? So Rabbi Billet gave a suggestion. It was an interesting one. I respectfully disagree a little bit with the suggestion that he gave. But I would say that the best thing that we should have done, we didn't have so many kids who came to shul who needed to be wheeled home. I would have said we should have had the non-Jews that are on campus anyway, wheel everybody home. That is really the best idea to do, because Rabbi Billig gave a suggestion, and this is meant with great respect to him, but you know, you can't blame a person. You come Shabbos morning, and you never deal with these shilas, it just never comes up, so it's very nice of me to say now that I looked into it for 3 days what the right answer is. But, you know, when you have to answer on the spot, it's not so easy. So, he had made a suggestion, a couple of suggestions, but one of the things he said was, the stroller being transported in the middle of the street, pachas midalat amos, which means you do a little bit, a drop at a time. So the whole isur of hotzah in the street is you're not allowed to carry more than 4 amos at a time, which is 8 feet. So he said, as long as you just wheel it and then you stop, which is going to take you forever to get home, but you just wheel it a little bit and then you stop, then you start again. So you're never really in violation of hotzah, because we don't assume that all of that accumulates if you keep stopping in the middle. That's true, and that's a great idea, and it's a brilliant idea. The problem is, that's only going to work until you get to your doorstep. But now, how do you get the kid from the Rosh HaRabim into your house? You're transferring properties. So number one, how do you get the kid from inside a shul to outside where the stroller is? Number one. Number two, once you get home, how do you get the kid from the stroller back into the house? So it didn't solve all the problems. It was a great idea, but it's only going to get you as far as the front door. So I think the best thing for a person to do is to have, in such a circumstance, to have a non-Jew do it. Now again, if we would have had 150 kids here on Shabbos, it wouldn't have been possible, but that's not what we had. We only had a couple of infants, so we should have had the non-Jews do it on our behalf. Someone did ask me about walking a dog on Shabbos, which is a good question. What about walking a dog on Shabbos? Is that called Hotzah? Now the dog generally walks by itself, but the Rambam says you can't say Hachai Nosei Hasatzmo. You can't say that. We assume that an animal is dead weight. An animal is not considered to be live weight. We assume that that's considered dead weight. That would certainly be considered carrying on Shabbos. However, what if my dog is just going to walk and I'm just going to hold on to the string that attaches the dog? I'm sorry, that is attached to the collar, the neck of the dog. Would you assume that that is permissible, or is that hotzah to carry the string? So the assumption is, the Shulchan Aruch writes, that would not be considered hotzah. Why? Because the dog is the dog. In the same way I'm allowed to wear clothing, the dog is also allowed to wear its clothing. Right? The dog obviously doesn't have to keep Shabbos. So the dog, part of its attire is it wears this leash. It wears a collar. So I'm allowed to hold on to it because this is really just considered an extension of the dog itself. However, someone pointed out to me last night, I don't have a dog, I don't have a pet, but someone did point out to me that very often when you're walking the dog, you really are schlepping the dog. The dog is not, you're not just, you know, holding the thing that the dog shouldn't get lost. You are actually responsible for the dog moving. Well, in that case, that's real hotzah on Shabbos. You're really transferring the animal from one place to another. So that is something we have to think about, something we need to be aware of. I think we covered a lot of the issues that come up. There's much more to talk about, but for now, we'll see everybody again next week.